Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
Hey everyone, this is BT and welcome to Inside the Episode. Today we're going inside episode 187, Reality versus Truth. The truth is we're going to have a lot of fun with this one, David, that's for sure.
Okay, I'm ready.
I know you are. So in this episode, we revisited the seven laws of the universe, which, you know, for the benefit of our longtime listeners and maybe as well for those people who are just new to the podcast, how does having a basic understanding of these laws help give a person the edge in creating lasting change in their lives?
So that's a really great question. The laws are a way for us to, it's a foundation for how to think, is what it's what it really is. It's interesting because those laws show up in the laws of physics, they show up in the laws of religion. They're called different things, but they show up in both places. And really, all it is understanding that when we incorporate those laws into how we think, we expand ourselves to be able to experience the truth, not just a small reality. Because normally we go, I don't have enough money. The law says, when you bring the laws in, the laws is like, you do have enough money. There's plenty of money here on the planet. You just have to bring it into your reality, right? Then you might say, okay, well, you're cutting a fine line there. No, not really. Not really. It's very, very different. I don't have it is an absolute, right?
Sure.
If I don't have it, I ain't buying it. And that's the way we're raised. You don't have it, you don't buy it. So you stay there, or you have to work for 20 years before you can friggin' get it. Yes, there's something to be said for the discipline of that. I get that. That's not where I'm coming from. Where I'm coming from is, what about people that do get things when they didn't have it? Where the hell did it come from? Right? It didn't come into their life by happenstance. They knew something different than most people knew. And I knew this as a kid. Everything that, forget money for a moment, because I know how triggering that is for people.
Right.
Think about everything that was invented. Look, I got an iPhone in my hand. Where was this phone when we were using the old yellow phones on the kitchen wall? Or an orange phone or a green one, whatever color family color you had, right? It was in somebody's mind.
Sure.
It showed up. This phone first showed up in Star Trek, right?
This
is advanced. This is beyond science fiction because we had flip phones in Star Trek.
Right,
beam me up, Scotty, right? It was a figment of somebody's imagination. But if you can bring it into your imagination, it has to exist in the universe somewhere. That's how everything that's formed by man's hands was formed. First, it was an image in the mind, and then it was an image in the hand, right? Now, let's get back to money. If I say I don't have money and I make decisions off of that premise, it becomes an absolute, and then my future becomes limited based on that idea. If I say I may not have the money in my hand, but I look at the universal laws, which says the money has to be here because it's abundant, now I can make a different decision. Where can I get the money in order to do this thing that I want to be, do, or have? Very different. If I'm raised with the idea that I'm not smart, and I did terrible in school, which was true. I did. I sucked in school. I'm raised with the idea that I'm not smart enough. I wasn't disciplined. I was a daydreamer. Like, I could just keep going down the line of all the things that were told to me by other people about my life, right? If that becomes the absolute, then I stay a truck driver. I stay a dock worker. I stay working at a petroleum company because I don't have the faculties to be able to move me further down the road. I don't have them. It's not part of my conscious awareness. But if I understand the law of perpetual law of transmutation of energy, if I understand the law of cause and effect, and I start thinking based on those laws, perpetual transmutation of energy says if I can have an image in my mind, doesn't matter what the image is, if I can build it, if I can build an image in my mind, I can hold it in my hand based on the law of cause and effect. The only thing I have to understand is what is the cause to get this effect? And I can do the cause because if I can think it, I can do it. You're never going to be able to think something that you can't do, right? I can tell people all the time, I never think about being a brain surgeon, right? It doesn't even cross my mind other than when I use it as an example. But yeah. Like, I don't think about that or dwell on it all day long, but there are things that I think about, like How big can I make this company? Other companies that I'm interested in starting. I think about those things, people that I want to meet, things that I want to do. Those things plague my thoughts all the time in a good way because I have the ability to do them. Now I have to put myself in a cause and effect situation to make them happen. That's what I did 20 years ago with this business. And it just continues to grow. And we do great things all over the world. That's what the laws allow us to do. They allow us to proceed past our reality and create the future, to create the purpose that we're put here to do. There's seven basic laws. Those laws teach us how to think, use them to think with, and then it breaks you out of your reality. And it puts you into what the possibility, like God's thoughts. It's like thinking like God. It's coming from a place of total abundance, all possibilities, nothing can stop us. Where can we go? If we think from that, we can do anything. And we do. I mean, the people that move us forward in life for millennia have thought based on those laws. I didn't create those laws. Those laws have been around since the Romans, the Greeks. Like, it's in our past history. It goes back thousands of years. The Egyptians talked about those laws in the pyramids. Like, it's been around forever.
Yeah. What I love about what you do, though, is you do break down the laws and you apply them. You didn't write them, of course, but you do apply them in everything that you do. And I think that's important for people, whether you're, like I said, new to this show or whether you've been following you for 20 years. These things do not change, but the fact that you continue to bring them up shows you, because we're not taught to think this way.
No.
Like, this is not a course you take in elementary, middle, high school, or even college about how to think according to the laws. Maybe we should, because we'd probably be a lot further along as a society than we are.
It is astounding when you think about this should be taught in grade school.
Agreed.
Like, kids should be getting this as a foundational way of thinking to problem solve.
Yes.
In their life. They would approach problems very differently if they could think from those seven laws, if they had them as a fundamental, like on a card or in their phone or whatever.
Yeah.
But here's this problem the teacher asked me to solve. Well, let me use these laws to figure out how I can move my mind into a different place of perceiving another outcome.
Yeah, it's so very true. And I can attest to this as well, because, you know, I've got two daughters who, one is, you know, 18, soon to be 19, and another one who is 16, who've grown up in this world over the course of the last decade. So much of their formative years, if you'll call them that, have been around the laws of the universe.
Yeah.
And to hear the language with which they approach and attack, you know, problems is much different than I did back when I was their age, right?
Absolutely.
So the fact that they've grown up in this, they're able to take it and do things a lot differently. And I think that's really the power of you putting the message out there, us reinforcing it in the home, and then them taking it and being like, okay, you know, if I have to hear this can be as good as you want it to be or as bad as you don't want it to be one more time in my house, I'm going to throw something at you. But that's the language we use, and therefore that's the language they use. I love the idea of teaching something like this to young people so that they're able to do it.
Yeah, and here's the other thing. So what's cool about that is that your kids were young when they started hearing this message.
Yes.
Pretty close to the age before they had the ability to reject it. So it was part of their reality growing up. We take adults in our company that were raised very much like you and I were raised, and we help them think differently and take them from making a few thousand dollars or a few hundred thousand dollars a year to over $1 million in less than 12 months, and then far beyond that, because they decide to take these laws and think based on these laws. And then we show them how to think towards money, how to think about building a team, how to think about building a business, how to increase their talent perspective as to what they're contributing in the world, how to think according to those laws. So those are really the only switches that these individuals make. Is it completely changes the perception of their reality, allows them to think what we used to call outside the box, which is now outside of my reality, so that I can step into a completely different reality, because that reality is already here.
Yeah.
It's already here. Like, you could step from this reality to this reality, and you could do it in the twinkling of an eye, so to speak. It's not that difficult.
Yeah, so I'm going to channel the skeptic here for a minute, because I know there's a lot of people out there, and there's people that have been, I see them come to events, and they've been to many events, and they say they're going to do something, and then they don't, and then they come back, and I know they think they're applying the law, right? They think they're applying this, and that they know that there's a greater truth out there, and they know that their current reality is not what they're expected to be doing, yet here they find themselves in this perpetual loop over and over and over again. So what do you say to those people? Is it because they didn't firmly commit to the decision, or is there something bigger at play here that they can help understand and get themselves out of it?
If you break it down to the simplest idea, they didn't firmly commit to the decision, but then the question becomes, why didn't they commit to that decision? And it always comes back to there was something else in their life that had seniority over their decision. In other words, they're attached to something. And let me tell you how important this is. This was actually, here's this law actually in the Bible. It's in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not put any other gods before me, right? Meaning that before anything, you follow God in your heart. You follow what God tells you to do in your heart before anything else. People have to ask themselves, in today's day and age, the way that we understand that, which is that's our desire to be, do, and have our life, to create our life as we're becoming aware of it on the inside. Are we actually doing that? Or are we following somebody who's uncomfortable in our life? Are we sticking to some pattern of behavior where we feel safer? Are we afraid we'll lose people if we actually make some kind of a change in our life? And you could always trace it back to what a person's afraid they're going to lose.
That's true. There's a lot of outside influence that's going on in every single one of those decisions. And it's absolutely 100% what you just talked about. More often than not, it's you're afraid of outgrowing your parents. You're afraid you're going to lose your parents, your friends, your loved ones, those people who have been telling you maybe you should go the safe route, even though your heart is telling you this is part of my purpose and my passion. They're following it based on someone else's rules for them. And we talked about that on this show many times about how you just can't do that if you really want to follow that internal guidance system.
No, you can't. Yeah. There's just no way. You will stay in your reality for the rest of your life. And what ends up happening then is that the people that you're attached to in the reality, they start dropping out of your reality. But you carry them around in your imagination forever. I'll never forget this. Before my mother passed away, there were some things that we became aware of through some people that came into our life about my grandfather and his past and everything. And my mother found out about this. And she sent me a bunch of information or whatever. It wasn't anything bad. It was just some different stuff that we didn't know about him. And she was asking me if I thought it was true. And I'm like, well, I don't, no idea. I can only tell you what the people are showing us here. But she went into this diatribe about how much she missed her father and how much she missed her brother, like people who had died. And this was not new for my mother. Like, she talked about this all the time. But that time, I said to her, why are you living in your past? Like, these people have been dead a long frickin' time, right? At that time, my uncle was probably dead 40 years at that point in time, 40, 45 years. And my grandfather dead maybe like 20. And she was constantly living in this imaginative past that she created for herself. And she got really defensive when I said that. She didn't like hearing it, but she had made the present and the future wrong, and she had romanticized the past and those people. Like, you know, they weren't perfect people. I mean, I knew both of them. I was very young when my uncle died, so I didn't know him that well, but I grew up half my life with my grandfather. I knew the man very, very well. And these were not perfect individuals, right? But my mom had romanticized them to the point where they were perfect. And she had demonized the present and the future so much that she just backed away from it and couldn't deal with it. And she was living in this imaginary past. And then everything that was attached to it, like, she would buy, this is back when VHS tapes were around, she would buy the movies from that era and the programs that were on TV from that era. And like, everything was about that era. So she lived in it. Like, it was like a mental illness. It was really not a good thing. But I also understood that for whatever reason, it became too painful to move forward and too painful to let go in order so she could move forward. And a couple times that she did try to move forward, she got hurt moving forward. So then she attached, that became the reality for her in that moment. And then she ended up staying right where she was. And I see so many people do this.
Yeah, the romanticizing of the good old days. And then when you really stop and think about it,
you
look
vintage,
back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's they weren't that good and they weren't great, no. You know, but yet...
You might as well commit suicide right now. What's the purpose of going on any further if it was so much better then?
Yeah, the more people like look back, the more they sacrifice what's happening right now. And we tell ourselves these stories about how great things were now back then. And then we start to believe them. But if we actually take a moment and think about it, there was a lot of shit that's going on then. Just like there's a lot of shit that's going on now, you might as well just stay in the now and realize that's the only thing you're guaranteed is right here, right now.
Yeah.
And that's a message to myself as much to the listeners out there who have a hard time staying present, because it's part of my work. You know, it's part of my work to stay in this place of focusing on the present and not really dwelling so much on the past. I've got great memories from my past, but I romanticize it oftentimes too much. So when we come off of a holiday break or when we come off of some milestone event, there's an intense sadness that I feel because I lost it. I missed that time. Instead of focusing on, God, the time I'm in right now is amazing, I'm always thinking about what's back there. Or even worse, what's coming, because you don't know what's coming either, right? You can predict as much as you want. But I think that's really important when you start to talk about the reality of a situation versus the truth of a situation. And I love how you wax poetic about the good old days, because I think that's where a lot of people probably listening to this go.
Yeah, I think so too.
Absolutely. You did use money as an example when talking about a person's current reality and what the bigger truth is. And you did say in the episode, we live in a universe of abundance, which is an overarching theme here. You talked about one side being poverty, and then on the other side, you've got wealth. And the reality of the situation places you somewhere on that line. And you said that people get stuck in their perception of their reality and how that affects the meaning that they assign to it. Can you say a little bit more about that poverty to wealth and where we fall on the line and how our perception might be one thing, but really the truth is something completely different?
Well, here's the thing. Our perception is factual. I'm not discounting that for any individual. If anything, we need to deal with it from the responsibility of our own life type situation, but we don't have to get emotionally involved in it. It doesn't need to become the story that's the totality of our, of our life. Our reality has facts, and that's what a person's looking at. They're looking at the facts, but the facts don't tell the whole story. It tells a moment in time. That's it. And in a lot of cases, those facts are telling you what happened 6-8 weeks ago. Also, it's also an indication of past behavior. We used to say, like for kids with a report card, it would be really cool to give a kid a blank report card when they start school and tell them to fill in their own grades that they expect to have at the end of the semester, right? Because when you get a kid's report card, you're seeing what they did over the last 6 weeks, not where they are now,
right?
It's a past history record is what it is. And that's what most people are living in, what they did yesterday, the result of what they did yesterday. But it becomes the totality of it, or if it becomes the totality in their mind from information in which to draw from, and they're afraid of the future, they stay stuck. They literally put up a wall. They can't move forward. Like you just said a minute ago, one of the things that you do is the future's unknown. Well, that might be scary, right?
Sure.
It's scary if we project images into it that's scary. If we say, here's the future that I intend to create, and I have the understanding of how to deal with problems as they show up, what's scary about that? Here's one thing we know. It's all, you know, and Freud talked about this. Like the way to psychic health was really accepting now, like this moment, like we're in this bubble that moves through time, and this is always our now. You have to accept what's happening here. That doesn't mean you have to accept it and it stays that way, but you have to accept it to understand what it means in the moment. If we accept it and we don't reject it and say, this sucks, because that's rejecting it, this sucks, or I wish it was better than this. We're not accepting the way that it is right now. Just sit in it right now and don't bring any judgment to it and just look at it for what it is and then say, okay, I either like this or don't like it. I want to create something different moving forward. Then we don't get stuck in giving it a meaning that it doesn't mean in and of itself. Nothing has meaning until we give it meaning. And that's people, like we hyper do that in our reality. Like we're giving everything. What does it mean? What does this mean? We hear it with clients all the time. What does that mean? This person said this. Or they'll send us an email. This happened. This happened. This happened. This happened. What does this mean? What does this mean? What do you want it to mean?
Right.
Right? It doesn't necessarily mean anything. What do you want it to mean? What do you want to create? Here's what it is. What do you want to create going forward? What do you want to choose for yourself? Don't get hyper stuck in whatever you think it means or what somebody else thinks it means. Don't judge yourself and make yourself a bad person if it's a mistake you're looking at. Don't do that. That's not productive. The idea of when we make a mistake is to learn from it. Like, I don't like this. How did I do that? What part of me caused this to happen? And how do I change that so it doesn't happen here when I get to this point in time? Right. And that if we're looking at it that way, we stay free. And it's work to stay free because anything could happen in this bubble that we call now that we don't like, that causes pain, that's painful. But again, as long as pain doesn't become the totality of the story, and it can for a lot of people, you know, like person loses a loved one, loses a child, find out they have cancer, like the pain of that, the fear of that can grab our soul in the moment. Our job is to realize that it's just the moment. It's not everything. There is something beyond the pain, and we have to take the time that it takes to move beyond it.
Yeah, that's great. That's really powerful, and that's what I'd like to believe most people that are on this journey are doing. Like, they recognize that this thing may have sucked and something may have happened, but that's the moment they're in right now. It doesn't mean you can't go back and change the diagnosis. You can't go back and change the loss of a loved one, but what you can do is recognize the pain, but also know that there's more beyond that you can work through.
Absolutely.
I think that's pretty powerful. And I love that you said facts don't tell the whole story, because I think that is a mic drop moment right there. I love that. You also said in the episode, the reality doesn't define who we are. We are the cause. The reality is the effect. What you are experiencing is only your reality and not the entire truth. I'm not my reality. I'm in my reality. I loved that. Can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, I'm not my reality, but I'm in it. Like, what is that? Where does that come from?
Well, if I say I am my reality, then what I do is I make the error of identifying myself with what I'm experiencing. And if I do that, I become one with that thing. So if I just fucked something up and I die myself as a fuck up, I have to be very careful, because if that becomes an absolute in my mind, if I fuck up again and I fuck up again and I fuck up again, before you know it, I'm saying I'm a fuck up. Everybody around me who's witnessing this is saying I'm a fuck up. I become a fuck up in my mind, and I keep creating fucked up things in my reality.
Sure.
Right? It is, your reality is the effect of what you did, not who you are. Hmm. Who you are, you have to look at in the same truth that you would look at anything else, right? You could say you're a child of the universe, a child of God, child of spirit, child of intellect or intelligence, whatever you want to say you are the child of, but that's what it is. And in that is all possibility. It's all potential. Like, you can become anything, right? Nothing is put here with the fulfillment of its entire potential, but always moving into its potential. That's what all of life does. It moves into its potential. It's moving from one potential to another potential, but it never stays as it is. Nothing stays as it is. So I'm not my reality. I'm just in it for the moment, but I'm in control of it. And that's another awareness that people have to get their hands around and their head around. I'm in control of changing this reality. If I don't like it, I can change it. It's not something that's happening to me. It's something that's happening for me. My reality is a pile of effects and results based on how I think, how I feel, what I do, who I associate with, what I choose to do with the things in my life. That's what creates my reality.
And it's something that's happening to me, not, what was that?
No, it's something that's happening for me, not to me.
Not to me. And that in itself is extremely powerful, because then you can sort of isolate, like, there is no problem too great that I can't work my way through.
Right.
If you go to fatalistic thinking and say, oh my God, this is an absolute, then you repeat it over and over and over again and you never break through that. But if you do come at it from what you just said, then chances are it's a moment in time, it's a snapshot in time, and you're able to move through it.
One keeps you a victim, one makes you stronger. And that happens through all of nature. You got a tree that's growing, the wind blows. It doesn't think to itself, this is happening to me, and it gets weaker and weaker and weaker. it understands at whatever level it does that the wind is blowing, the roots go deeper, it becomes stronger, it's able to sustain higher and higher winds as it
it adapts on the fly.
It absolutely adapts. All of nature either adapts or it's reduced to its base level and it starts over.
Right. So you have a choice to make right here and now. You either adapt or you just die off. That's basically where you're at.
You do.
I mean, maybe it's a metaphorical death.
No, it's a reality.
Okay.
It's a total reality. Okay. Like if we don't, because we all kind of take care of each other in this world in various different ways, we've created a society where we don't feel the effects of doing nothing very quickly, right? Because people will take care of us. We got to take care of our own, so to speak. So we can literally live a life where we don't do a damn thing and still maintain some semblance of health and fulfilling our needs in the moment. Like, look at the homeless problem that we have. There's so many homeless people. It's because other people are taking care of them. And there's resources that they can get their hands on that we throw away that are resources that people can use. So they can sustain that period of not doing much for a long period of time. In the overarching idea of the universe, it's all blip in time that they exist, but it's a blip in time for everybody. So, like human beings, you're either moving forward or you're moving backward. You're either creating or you're disintegrating. You're either living or you're dying. There's no in between.
Yeah. And one thing I've learned on the million that you've taught me is if you're not growing, you're dying, period.
You are.
And that's a mantra that we carry with us at this company. And it's really impactful when you stop and think about it. All right, let's finish off with this. You briefly talked about your first experience at your Tony Robbins event. I believe you said it was the early 90s when you were really, 93, really early on in this journey, right? And you said the amount of positivity that you encountered at that event was such a culture shock because it was so very different than what you were used to back in your home environment. So how did that event shape who you were going to become if you can put yourself back in 93, as we were talking about looking back? But I have a feeling this event was really huge in your growth. So take us back to 93 and how that event shaped who you were going to become later on.
Well, it was a real process in me getting there. It started off with me buying Robin's personal power tapes. And I think I listened to them for a year or something like that before I actually decided to go to an event. And I was on a mailing list or something, and I got a notice that he was having an event in Ohio. I think it was in Columbus, Ohio at the time. It was somewhere in Ohio, Columbus. And the event was $3,600. I didn't have $3,600. And long story short, I realized that if I was to sell my boat, I would have enough money to go. I wanted to move forward in my life more than anything. And I knew that, I shouldn't say I knew. I had a very deep feeling that this event would open me up to something completely different. I had no idea what. So long story short, sell a boat, get the ticket, go. Get there, and there's thousands of people. And they're all jumping up and down. And, you know, everybody is like you. I spent several days with these people, and I found out that they all wanted something different from their life. They did not want what life was suggesting that they have as their life, wherever they were coming from. They wanted something more. I was shocked at how many of them there were and how enthusiastic they were about this newfound, I can move forward in my life idea type thing. So much so that it made me very uncomfortable. Like I've already said, I felt very much like out of my skin, like I don't belong with these people. But the other side of myself was like, this is exactly where you need to be. The way it shaped me, I think, was twofold. One was I saw Robbins do the magic that he does up on stage. And I thought to myself, it would be really cool to do that someday. Not him, but my own version of it. I kind of cast that aside as fast as I thought it. It was just a brief experience of many experiences I had that week while I was there. But what I did know was that all of these people were going in a much different direction than I was going or anybody that I knew. So I was like, the only way for me to stay in this energy and this positivity and find out new things is to be around these people. So I started going to everything that I could get enough money to go to. And then, so that's why I say like Robbins was my first coach. And then several years later, I found Proctor and I ended up working with him. But all of these people, like I knew, I didn't know where I was going. I didn't know how I was going to get there. I didn't know what it was. I had absolutely no idea. But I did know that they were answering questions that I had been seeking answers to my whole life. And they were answering them right out in a way that I could understand them. And it allowed me to step forward. So not only was I doing this, T, but my life was getting better, right? I went from driving a truck to basically running a company in a very short period of time. And then I was like, well, shit, if I could do this, I could run my own company. What the hell am I doing this for them for? I'm going to go do something on my own. And they also found out that I had the gift to do what it is that I do. But I would have never known that hadn't I stepped out and decided to do it.
Yeah. And you were seeing the results, which probably reinforced the idea that this really works and I'm going to continue with it. I think that's why.
I was seeing the results in every area of my life.
Like a lot of people, that's like why dieting doesn't necessarily work for people, because if they don't see the results within the first hour that they're on it, then they quit, right? So you were seeing the results. And it's interesting you tell the story about Tony Robbins, because you're that for me. You're that for us. Like my first event I ever went to that was of this, you know, variety was like a 400 or 500 person event where there was just tons of energy and positivity, and you're networking and you're meeting all these great people who are doing great things, and you can't help but be wrapped up in it and enjoy, and you've got all these plans, and then you go home and a lot of times, you know, you struggle a little bit because you're not in that energy. So you got to put yourself back in that energy until you're able to sustain it outside of it. So you're that for me, like what, you know, Tony was for you, which I think is really super cool. And you moved mountains and sold boats to get to those events. So I think that showed right there your commitment level to what it was going to take for you to create a new reality for yourself based on the truth where you saw yourself.
And then I had to go home and figure out how do I replicate this on a micro level, which is my life, what I just experienced in the macro, which was Tony's world. How do I bring that home and create that? And that's where it got hard, because that where eventually it came down to, okay, there's a lot of people that you need to get rid of in your life because they ain't going in that direction and they're only going to keep you where you are. So I had to slowly get rid of those individuals and then bring in new people. And now I'm like surrounded with amazing people, but that part was hard. And everybody that I see go through that, it's hard. What I learned about it though, I had to ask myself some really tough questions, like, why am I so tied to these individuals? They clearly have no desire to go in the place that I'm going. Nothing wrong with them. Good people. Right. They just did not want that for their life. And I did. And I knew that I was already seeing the fact that I didn't have anything in common with them anymore. I mean, the only thing I had in common with these individuals was my past, right? My high school days, growing up, family, like, all the things from my past, nothing futuristically. They were not going in the same direction. And a lot of them were going down some pretty dark roads that I didn't want to go down. Like, even if I didn't go down this road with Tony, I didn't want to go down that road, you know, right? I didn't want to go down the road of drugs and alcohol in my life. And they were going down those roads pretty heavy, some of them. So I was like, that road. I'm not going down that road.
It's really interesting to think, and I here I go again looking back, but it is really interesting to think that those types of decisions that you made to go in that direction saved you some major pain, probably going the other way, like drugs, alcohol. I know I would be a completely different person if I would have, you know, listened to what was telling me to go back home, do this thing, you know, like I've talked about before, bowl on Mondays, golf on Tuesdays, drink on any day that ends in Y. That would have been my life as opposed to where I am now, surrounded by powerful thinkers and people who are really always wanting to better their best each day out. So
I was given so few options as to what to do with my life. I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable. I mean, I loved my family, like my immediate family. I loved my kids. I loved my wife. But even what I did with them was limited to what my experience in life was. I needed a completely different perspective. I needed to see this truth that we've been talking about more and more and more, and that it was available for me, and that I could pass it on to my kids and you know, create that extraordinary family and the things that we could do and like all of that. I needed to experience that, and I wasn't going to do it in the environment that I created for myself up to that point.
Yeah, that's great. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's really important for people to understand a little bit more about where you came from, and I love that you went a little bit deeper into your first experience at that Tony Robbins event, and thanks for coming inside. This was great.
Now you got it. Change your reality, man.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.